Back together again, you and I chatting it up on Tuesday, August 13th, 2024 on Connecticut Today, where we spoke with Monroe resident Scott Pearson about his petition drive to try and change the public benefits charge on electric bills for state consumers. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by with news about the State Department of Transportation, and I, during the show, added a few thoughts on media coverage of the presidential race. Coming up about an hour from now, Megan Portfolio and the Hartford Portfolio, Yankee Institute. Now, a few days ago, Megan wrote one of her pieces regarding an effort by this gentleman doing something which is not as hard as it used to be. Now, with the advent and the full-throated embrace of social media and the ability to do things like online petitions, our next guest decided, hey, maybe we could try and do something, just maybe, as citizens here, to maybe at least get legislators' attention after a whole bunch of folks saw their electric bills, primarily with Eversource, jump for their July usage, primarily because of costs connected with buying power, but also with another add-on there. It's one of four sections, the public benefit section of the bill. Scott Pearson joins us. He is a Monroe resident right in the Valley. Hey, Scott, it's Paul here. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for taking the time. We appreciate it. We know you're busy. So you open up your bill, Scott, what, a few weeks ago? I guess this was the bill for July usage. And you saw what that made you go, tell us about that.
All right. So actually, I don't do the billing. My wife does.
Well, does. Been there, done that. Yeah. Honey. Yes. So,
I didn't open up any bill, but okay. On Facebook,
yeah.
There was a Monroe Group website,
okay.
Which is a good community. And this girl, Lisa, she posted, what is this public benefit? And It was over $200 for a bill with
$952. Saw that. Yeah. Yeah.
I said, Lisa, I have no idea. I said, well, let me do some investigating.
Okay.
And, oh, my God, so as I dive into the abyss, it gets uglier and uglier.
So you went online, you start peeling this apart, you're talking to people, and did you – now, I don't live in an NU or UI area, Scott. I live in a town with its own municipal, you know, electric grid. But did you find a lot of other people were reacting to this the way your associate did there online and other people?
Oh, absolutely. People were just so upset. They have been stretched to the limit, and now they get this. And certain people actually told me, I don't know how I'm going to pay this bill. Mm. You know, they're limited one budget, and I know you live in Wallingford, lucky you.
I'm sorry. I didn't want to rub it in, but yeah.
Yeah, but it's so funny that Wallingford is not subjected to this public benefit at all.
Yeah, because Wallingford, in fact, there's a little list here I pulled up. I'll go over it later. Eight or nine utilities, Scott, never sold out to the big ones. So knock on wood about that. So instead of just leaving it here and saying, all right, whatever, this sucks, what did you decide to do and what are you doing right now that people should know about?
So I did write the petition. And as I dove in deeper and deeper to find out, the government is really convoluted. So, I mean, it just took all my time. I mean, every single moment, sometimes I would actually get like 4 hours sleep.
Wow.
And I posted a lot of updates. So as what I learned, but, you know, my I call them my warriors. They started emailing the government,
yeah.
You know, our representatives and stuff. And, you know, I think they share a form letter because all of them came back just pretty much the same. Oh, it's just 20%.
Okay.
But on my latest update, you know, they neglected to say 20% per kilowatt hour. So on the other one, Elda, who I just recently spoke to, she did a spreadsheet for July and August. And her increase, because it's by usage, so her increase, supply went up from 106 to 190, which is 79%.
Right.
And then the transmission, 76%. Mm-hmm. And her public benefit went from $21.56 to $155.66,
wow.
Which is 621% increase.
And Scott, you probably in some of the responses you're getting, and you've shaken the trees here, which is good. And now legislators are finally saying, well, this is this way because A, B, and C. To which I said on my show last week, is all right, you can tell us that, but that doesn't make it any easier, as you say, for people to pay this. It's ridiculous.
It is. It's absolutely ridiculous. So one certain senator was on PLR.
Yeah.
Your affiliate.
Down the hall. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And he goes, well, the bill is the bill. You just have to deal with it. And it's like, oh, my God.
That's great.
So
isn't that great? Boy, can you sound any more elitist, Scott? Oh, my God. Jeez,
and so, actually, Chaz and AJ, they go, you know, you're a little snotty.
Yeah, I love that. Well, they would, and I would, too, absolutely. So you hear that, and then what do you think?
So I had to take a half an hour to recoup because I was in the middle of writing my updates, and I just could not believe the words coming out of his mouth. He was so nonchalant about it, I didn't care. And then people wrote to him, and it's Senator Needleman.
Oh, yeah, Norm Needleman, yeah, who I've tried to get on this show. So I've tried to get on the show, by the way, and he won't come on, you know, whatever. So how did you, so where did the idea, and the guest is Scott Pearson, where did the idea to set something up on change.org come from?
Well, actually, I really don't know. I said I have to do something. So I've seen petitions before in change.org. So I wrote it up, and it's actually a living document because I have to add into it as I learn more and more about this.
Mm-hmm.
And the document, I don't know if you read it, Paul, but
I see it right here. I'm looking at it right here. Yep, yep.
I got a lot of links to it, and I verify all information. There's no guessing, well, this happened and this happened. I need to, like, verify things first. So, And I do create a lot of hyperlinks to the petition. And then on my updates as well, I create a lot of hyperlinks for additional information if people are interested in going that and learning more.
Absolutely.
So I just said, okay, well, you know what? I'll just start this and we'll see where it goes, you know. But it really took off.
So, now I see, and folks, as we speak, and I'll tell you about how to do this a little later if you want to log on and add your name to this, 33,608 signatures. Your new goal is 35,000. And I got to tell you, Scott, that's not too bad because the way the legislature is set up in this state, particularly in the House with 151 state House members, that amount of signatures, Scott, I can tell you from following this for 40 years, that can shake some trees in Hartford. And that could actually, you know, if your cards are played right and the people who have signed on to this maintain their anger, that could change things in November. Hopefully it will.
I'm hoping so because people are really stretched to the limit and they are very angry. And a lot of people are really hurting. So I had this on one of my updates. True story, during that really hot humidity weather we had last week, I went up to a very senior citizen's apartment to service, the electronics equipment that I do.
Okay.
And it was in a high rise. And I go, oh, my God, it's like 100 degrees in here. You want to turn on the heat? She goes, I can't afford it.
Oh.
And it just broke my heart. And I wrote about it on one of my updates. It just broke my heart. So, you know, with that, I'm glad it got a lot of traction. And you're absolutely right. My goal. So change.org actually sets those goals. And once the goals are reached, then it goes up to the next level.
Got it.
So I'm kind of hoping for 100,000.
Yeah.
My true goal is 300,000 only because that represents 1/10 of the population of the state of Connecticut.
Oh, let me tell you, Scott, I've been doing this a long time. Even if you get 100,000, there will be people frightened in Hartford. They're going to be frightened at this. I mean, if they see 33 or 35,000, Scott, that's a lot of people. And a lot of people who follow this stuff, they vote. They're active. So you should be proud and happy so far of what you've done. I really commend you for this. I do. I hope you know what you're doing.
I hope I know what
I'm
doing.
No, but I mean, I hope you realize how important this is and how you're mobilizing here just the way the people mobilized against tolls a couple of years ago.
Right. And Megan had a good part to do with that. So, she's such a sweetheart. Mm-hmm. So we actually kind of talked a few times after that,
sure.
after the article. And the thing is, you know, which kind of just, I just learned this a day or so ago, mm-hmm. that there was a, where is it now? I'm trying to look for it.
Okay.
So August 6th, they just had a press release. August 6th, Governor Lamont was granted $389 million in the federal grant money mm-hmm. to do exactly what we're doing, to the energy storage infrastructure, to reformat it. And I don't know if anyone knew this. I just kind of searched and found it by accident.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so you have that money,
mm-hmm.
and now you're getting this money. And we have ARPA, which is the American Rescue Plan. They got $2.6 billion from our
from
federal
the feds.
Government.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
yeah. So why aren't they using any of the ARPA money?
It is, Scott. I've asked that of folks in Hartford and others, and you get convoluted answers here. But at least listen. At least you're shaking the trees on this. Thousands of people have logged on to this. I'm going to continue to talk about this. I'll post this on my own social media feeds. And listen, maybe, you know, Scott, by what you've started here, there's enough concern in Hartford to say, hey, maybe if common folks react to this, we can have a change here. Folks, I'll tell you exactly how to do this in a couple of moments. Scott Pearson has been the guest. Scott, be good. Keep up the fight,
thank
and we'll
you.
We'll chat down the road. Thank you, Scott. Appreciate it.
Okay, Paul. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Scott. Bye-bye. Megan Portfolio is here. She of the Hartford Portfolio at the Yankee Institute. Megan, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good, and thank you for hooking me up with Mr. Pearson from the last segment there. And, Megan, I got to tell you, I'm getting a bunch of people emailing me. Please send me the link, and I've been doing that for the past 5 or 10 minutes. So cool.
Oh, that guy, love him. I'm so proud of him.
Mm-hmm.
I love when citizens
yes.
who have way better things to do than harass the government stand up and,
mm-hmm.
and just speak out. And I love him. I think he's done such a great job.
Yeah.
And thanks for having him on.
Oh, no, listen. And again, you know, he was saying, well, you know, 35,000, we got to get higher. Connecticut does have 3 million people. And I say, but wait a minute. You know this as well as I do, Megan. You know, with 151 state house districts, sometimes you don't have to rattle that many votes in some of these tight districts to really put the fear of God in some of these legislators. You just don't. The math is there.
This isn't like one of the number, you know, the top three issues
mm-hmm.
when people are going to the voting place.
Yeah.
If that's not on the front of your brain, then I don't know what else to do.
Yeah.
But
he was
awesome.
Yeah. And one thing, Megan, I don't know, and we'll get to your topic here in a moment, but one thing that just drives me nuts is when I hear from legislators of both parties sometimes in both chambers, well, you know, this is how we decided it. Well, okay, this is in the law, but I don't have the money for this. Like, how are you going to help me here? Because, you know, Megan, if they really cared, if there was a genuine effort to say this is bad for people, you know, do something. We landed a man on the moon in 1969, two of them, in fact, and they came back okay. So if we put our minds to something, we can figure it out. But the hands up in the air stuff, hey, well, this is just the way it is. I'm sorry, I don't buy it. I just know.
Oh, I don't buy it. And it's like Bill Belichick. I'm not even a football fan,
okay.
but Bill Belichick says, do your job.
Yeah, do your job.
I don't want to hear the finger pointing. I don't want to see it. Do your job.
Mm-hmm.
Do what you got elected to do. You get paid. I know they complain sometimes that the salary is too low,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's part-time legislature. Do your job. Most of them are going to be getting pensions and the health benefits. It isn't even Blumenthal still getting his government
mm-hmm.
Health benefits. It's like just the money comes in. You got plenty of money from the federal government during
mm-hmm.
COVID. You mean to tell me you didn't know this was coming down the pike?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway,
so
you like to get me fired up.
Yeah, so listen, we got you all fired up pregame here, so what do you have for us this week?
Oh, a little bit of DEI. I'm sure your listeners
okay.
are hearing about that.
All right.
Is there such thing as too much DEI?
Diversity,
diversity,
equity, and inclusion. Now, what's up with that?
Well, now we're some people are changing it, I guess, because, I don't know, try to trick us. But now it's called, what is it, EDIB, equity, diversity, inclusivity, and belonging. So the DOT put out a
survey.
Wait a minute. Hold it.
Rewind this. I'm going back to my tape days. Rewind this. It's now called what?
Equity, diversity, inclusion, and belonging. Doesn't
okay.
that make you feel
belonging.
All warm inside?
Belonging. Okay. What do you have?
So the DOT is really focusing on this EDIB that we're calling it now within their agency. And to kick it off, they sent out a survey to their employees, which they could fill out anonymously, and just to get like a baseline of where the agency's at with its DEI or EDIB, whatever you want to call it. But I was looking at the survey, a source had sent it to me, mm-hmm. and it's one of these typical government creating a problem so they can solve it.
Mm-hmm.
So the survey starts off super easy, like do you feel respected based
okay.
on your culture in the workplace?
Yeah.
And it's most of that stuff that people pretty much responded mostly positively, like
yeah,
I'm respected, my views are listened to, my opinions are listened to. And then they start leading the respondents with these weird questions. Like, so after the normal questions, they immediately kick in.
Yeah.
Do you experience racial, ethnic, gender bias jokes or other discriminating comments frequently at the DOT? Like, what is a discriminating comment? Like, they don't even define these mm-hmm. terms. But then they get like this huge response of people saying yes. They are experiencing racial and ethnic jokes in the office.
Really?
But the first three questions prior to that, they're saying, no, there's no issue. I'm respected. But now all of a sudden, like if I actually worked in an office where there was super inappropriate, racist, I actually had to quit the job because it was actually like too much for me. I'm like, this is not a good work environment.
Yeah, good for you.
I just was like, I'm done.
Yeah.
So if you're hearing these kind of things in your office, then clearly you're not being respected. So it's just it's a bogus survey. But what they want to do with this is they want to start having, DEI training. Like these poor workers, I actually feel bad for these poor state workers. They want to go to work. They want to do their job and they want to go home. Now they're going to be forced to sit through all this nonsense training. And then that's not it. So that's nice. So I get it. You're running an agency. You want your workers to be happy, workers, respected workers, work harder. And that's nice. But now the governor, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
He like magically, we have money for this. We don't have money for electricity.
Yeah.
But we have money for this, the Office of Equity and Opportunity. And is creating this whole other office, which is like, how many times are we going to duplicate the efforts? And when are the workers actually supposed to get their jobs done?
I wonder, Megan, and the guest is Megan Portfolio from the Yankee Institute, Read the Hartford Portfolio. I wonder if, we talked about the Melissa McCall situation and the previous state health commissioner, and maybe this. So I wonder if, and again, I'll wonder it now. Again, is there stuff that's getting back to the governor for whatever reason? And was he trying to be proactive on this? Now, with the DOT, were there any rumblings that there was stuff going on internally?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, I hope not. I mean, it's actually kind of scary.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want state workers going to work. They're supposed to be, public servants.
Yeah.
I want them to work. I don't want them to have to deal with, racism in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I personally haven't heard of anything coming out of the DOT of that. But it's just, it's so fine. Let's just say there is an issue and Governor Lamont's addressing it. Why are we duplicating this? Like, I mean, are you expecting your employees to sit there in DEI training all day? Like, how are they supposed to get their work done?
Well, it keeps the attorneys away too, right, Megan? I mean, to a point, you do this stuff preemptively instead of waiting for a lawsuit to say, the state of Connecticut under one governor, Edward Lamont, did not take a preemptive effort. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too jaded, but I don't know.
I don't know. I think I'm more jaded.
Okay. All right, so check that out. What's going on inside the DOT with Megan Portfolio? Read the Hartford Portfolio from the Yankee Institute every darn week. In fact, read it multiple times a week because when Megan is not watching CTN continuously, she's writing and stuff like that.
Oh, right. Yeah, and then after you're done reading the Hartford Portfolio, yeah. go to thechange.org and
yes.
find the petition.
Absolutely. Megan, good to talk with you. We'll talk next week. Thanks.
Bye, Paul.
All right, Megan Portfolio there. Look at the Hartford Portfolio. So as we start out here on this Tuesday, I'm really at a loss, honestly, and I'm not saying this for effect. I'm really at a loss as to what to think here. You, Paul, can't think, well, you know, sometimes it does hurt. But I'm at a loss as to what people are thinking, to what voters are thinking, to what people in my own business are thinking and doing here. Because I find this just hard to fathom here. And I'm wondering if people will just take a choice from column B because it's not column A. And I think people are allowing their brains, a lot of you people out there, you know who I'm talking about. A lot of your brains are being allowed to turn to mush. And you are allowing things to happen in society out of fear, out of, I hate to say it, out of ignorance, out of just being tired mentally. And you know what I'm talking about. But if you don't, let me lay this out here. Now, I did not tune into or log on to or catch any sort of audio or video from, I guess, Donald Trump did a chat last night with Elon Musk on X, formerly Twitter. Now, I get it. A lot of people don't like Musk. A lot of people don't like Trump. I get it. You have Musk derangement syndrome. You have Trump derangement syndrome. Trump could cure cancer and you wouldn't take it. Whatever. I get that. I understand that. Good on you. But I sit back today when I woke up this morning and I'm reading all the stuff on my phone as I stumble around my condo. And there's a juxtaposition there that people either don't see or they do see it and they don't care. And if they don't care, we're up you-know-what creek without a paddle. Let me tell you. So, look, nobody really knows what the impact of the Trump chat with Elon Musk was last night as far as numbers are concerned. You know, Elon Musk is saying, well, maybe 95 million people watched or listened in. Tech experts say it's much lower than that. It may have been 10 or 20 million, but there was a pretty good chunk. And I have no idea. I didn't log on to it. I was so stinking tired last night. I watched the Yankees lose to the worst team in baseball and I went to bed. But having said that, maybe the worst team in history besting the 62 Mets, but I digress. You know, I go to bed and I wake up this morning and the overriding notion is that a pretty good amount of people either listened to or watched some of this Trump chat last night with Elon Musk. All right, whatever. And you know, when I'm watching this, I'm watching the numbers. I'm not watching the actual chat. And, of course, you look at some of the headlines here. I did a Google search to see what the coverage was. What do I see? And, like I said, I'm glad I didn't watch it because I don't have to because I know what's going on. I do, honestly, seriously. Trump slurred words. Now, this is a media who licked the hand and other body parts of the White House when everybody and their grandmother could look at video of Joe Biden and knew something wasn't right. But every time it was mentioned by Fox News or Newsmax or the Post, everybody, oh, Biden's fine, including Kamala Harris. Oh, he's great. He's fine. He's sharp as a tack. Boy, you should sit on the meetings with him. Yeah, I guess we should have, huh? So the only thing they're saying about last night is, well, Trump slurred some words. Oh, okay. Trump was rambling during his two-hour chat with Elon Musk. Oh, all right. So he rambles. Yeah. And what? Oh, Trump outlined extremist policy positions. All right, and I'll tell you, we'll play the game here. I'll take all of that at face value. You win the round. Trump slurred a few words. He rambled with Elon Musk. It wasn't 90 million people. It was 5, 10, or 20 million people. Okay, you win that round. My turn. Why is Kamala Harris still not talking to the media? Now, Donald Trump said, I guess he said this a few days ago. I think he may have repeated it last night. He said he went there, to which I've been wondering about. I guess there's allusions to, is she smart enough to hold a news conference? No, seriously. I mean, I'm starting to think, and I know there's the axiom of if you're going good and she's getting a lot of people at these rallies, don't screw it up by actually having to field questions or anything. But my God, are Americans that dumb? Would they really vote for this woman if she doesn't even really hold genuine news conferences? Now, maybe you would. Maybe you're that sick of Trump. And I get it. I respect that. But please spare me from how wonderful she is until I hear an actual idea. And I don't mind people go, look, this is Barack Obama 2.0. And that's fine. I'm reading that more and more this weekend. This is Obama 2.0, a new generation of leader. The multi-ethnicity is appealing to some people. Here's the difference. Obama was really sharp. From the moment he gave that speech, when was it? The 2004 Democratic Convention. He was marked an up-and-comer. He's really sharp. I'm starting to wonder if Trump hasn't hit on something in other people. Is she smart enough to do this? And I don't mean that in a denigrating way. But it's been 22 days, and she hasn't held a news conference. She hasn't even spoken to reporters in any sort of mass sort of gathering here. And then I read this, and I left it alone because I was doing Melissa's show, and we do different kinds of shows at different parts of the day. And then she says this. Where do I have this? She had just a few seconds of an exchange the other day with some reporters, and they asked her. They said, "Madam Vice President, when are you going to talk to us?" Here's what she said. Quote, "I've talked to my team. I want us to get an interview scheduled before the end of the month." What? Now, she didn't say she was going to do one. She said, well, we'll try to do it before the end of the month. She said that 4 days ago. So, and I understand she has momentum. I get it. I understand it. But good God. You people in my business, take off the knee pads, for God's sake. My God, this fawning coverage. I mean, my God, I look over at my journalism certificate and look over at some of the awards I've won. Yes, I know, all you people who think I'm a right-wing nut, I actually won neutral newscasting awards at one time because I understood what the business was about. But my God, stop. Look, you can pound Trump all you want. You're doing that today. Oh, he rambled. Like Joe Biden didn't ramble, but that's okay. Oh, no, that was his stutter. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Buying what the White House said for 2 years, hook, line, and sinker. Okay, but it was Joe's stutter. All right. And you're pounding Trump. Okay, that's fine. Maybe he did ramble. Maybe he did slur words. Listen, the guy's almost 79. Okay, but why on God's green earth are you letting this woman get away with just playing you people? I mean, my God, it's not just me, folks. When the New York Times says there's something wrong here. There's something wrong. But I get it. They see themselves as Obama 2.0, and maybe they are. But this is mind-boggling, and I'm telling you, she may just go the entire campaign without a real news conference. And when I mean real, you don't get a list of people that are approved to be called on. You walk into the belly of the beast like Donald Trump does, whether you like him or not, like Bill Clinton did, like Barack Obama did, like Joe Biden did once he got elected 4 years ago. And you say, what do you got? Let's go. Like George, both the Bushes did, like Ronald Reagan used to. I'm starting to wonder here. I know it's going to upset you when I say, is she smart enough? She's great off a teleprompter. And all you people who said, well, you know, Dan Quayle's not really all that smart. He couldn't spell potato. All right. Well, if you ask, remember Dan Quayle? Nice guy, good record in Congress. Turned out to be a fine guy. He misspelled potato that day. And you slugs in my business never let him forget it. Never let him forget it. All right. Is she smart enough? I read a, before we go to news and traffic and weather together here, I read a piece in The Hill the other day, hardly a right-wing publication online. You know, in The Hill, an unnamed Democratic source said to a Hill reporter, well, we're still trying to figure out, I'm kind of paraphrasing here, we're trying to figure out a way that she can respond to questions on the economy. Really? It's taken you almost 4 weeks? No, it's not the response, pal. You're worried about the person giving it. Is she smart enough to handle this? Is Trump right? Are other people now starting to say, hey, what's going on here? Is she strictly off the teleprompter or not?